the investor asked, could I sing? And he says, oh, yes, she can sing. So they invested money. We went to recording studio, Luther Vandross, Irene Cara, Gordon Grovey, Gordy, and Diva Gray were background singers on my album because they were the top session singers in New York. I recorded half of the album. The producer ran off with the master tapes, never to be seen again. So I stay in New York.
Welcome to another episode of Horizon Music, the podcast. I'm your host, Thea Wood. I met our next guest at a Detroit public television meeting at Boss Blue in Detroit. I knew she was a woman who was gifted in the ancient art of storytelling, but had no idea that her creative adventure started as a young girl with a violin. She unexpectedly turned from nerdy violinist to a bride of Funkenstein with arguably the coolest band in the world, George Clinton and Parliament Funkadelic. After 10 years with the band, she broadened her creative energies to acting, comedy, comedy writing, and playwriting with 9 film and TV credits. She founded the Obsidian Theater Company in Toronto and eventually zeroed in on storytelling with the live stage event, The Secret Society of Twisted Storytellers in Detroit. It started as a way to heal herself and heal a community suffering from years of crisis. She's the executive director of the nonprofit, the Society for the Reinstitutionalization of Storytelling, and host of Detroit Performs Live at the Mary Grove, and WDET's podcast, Twisted Storytellers, spotlighting the intricate stories of women and men, feeding our souls with compassion and understanding. This interview took place backstage at the Mary Grove Theater in Detroit in 2022. It's time now to meet the funked up midwife of stories and storytellers, Miss Satori Shakur.
Thank you, Thea. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
Oh my gosh, it's such a pleasure to be here. And we are actually at Mary Grove College today, right before performance.
Yes.
That means that time is ticking and we should get straight to the shakedown questions. Are you ready to shake it down?
Yes.
All right, here's our first question. Who was your first concert?
My first concert was, let me look back. Ooh, Peter and the Wolf, the Detroit Symphony Orchestra. It was like a field trip in junior high.
Now, do you remember what year that was?
Ooh, no.
19. First album you bought with your own money.
I bought the Dramatics.
The Dramatics.
I love the song, I Want to Go Outside in the Rain. And they were a local Detroit band. And
got to support the local scene.
Yeah.
For sure. Well, nowadays, which artist or band is in heavy rotation on your playlist?
I don't really have anybody on my playlist right now.
Ooh, who are you watching on YouTube?
Oh, I watch all these, Lapeef, the Lapeef Network. I watch lectures. Old lectures. I do a lot of history, surfing and stuff. And when I'm on the treadmill or on the bike in the gym, I like to listen to BB and CC whining. They lift up my soul.
Love it. Okay, well then that leads to our next question. Which woman has had the most influence on your career?
Ooh. Well, Orthea Barnes, when I was growing up, and she became a mentor later on in life. She's deceased now. Aretha Franklin. Gladys Knight. I probably cook her a meal myself. Something she taught me to cook. Yeah.
Wonderful. Mm-hmm. Well, our last question is a doozy. What is one life goal you'd like to accomplish before climbing that golden stairway to heaven?
I want to perform my solo stand-up storytelling concert called Confessions of a Menopausal Femme Fatale. And it's a 75-minute solo performance of me telling my story.
Wow, okay, so the Menopausal Femme Fatale, I think I can relate to that.
Yeah, you should come and see it.
I will, for sure.
Yes.
Well, there we go. We made it through the shakedown.
All right.
I know, they move so fast. And before we get into our next segment, what we're going to do is take a short break and listen to a message, and we'll be right back with Satori Shakur.
All right.
Hi, I'm Oliver, the sexy AI voice that Horizon Music created to invite you to sign up for Horizon Music, the newsletter. discover trailblazers and rising stars who work on stage, on air, and behind the scenes in music. Plus, you'll get notices on new podcast episodes, in-person and online events, and discussions about the issues that affect women in music. Click the newsletter link in the show notes or visit horizonmusic.substack.com. That's HERIZON music.substack.com.
Before we get back to the interview, I want to share my magic mind story. My friends know that I've never liked coffee, not even the smell of it. I know, it's weird, but it is my curse. Anyway, so for most of my life, caffeinated soda has been my go-to for any kind of energy boost. Typically, I'll drink a couple of glasses at lunch and then try to make it through the rest of my workday without falling asleep, which is kind of the goal. But it didn't address the fogginess and anxiety that I'm now experiencing due to menopause, you know, the joys of menopause. So when the folks at Magic Mind gifted me a sample box of their liquid shots with a consideration fee, I took a chance and just tried it out. And I'll admit, I was skeptical that a shot of quote-unquote all-natural ingredients would be effective because, quite frankly, it hasn't been in the past. But I drank a shot a day, and I waited for a noticeable difference. Well, on day 5, the nootropics, aptogens, and functional mushrooms, yes, mushrooms, must have kicked in because I wasn't craving the lunchtime sodas anymore, and my brain fog seemed to be lifting. By day 8, I realized that the Magic Mind shots were the real deal because the effects kept getting better and better. And then I realized, well, shoot, this would be helpful for women like me who travel a lot or are looking to minimize or replace their coffee or soda intake or want to generally feel more clear-headed. So I talked to Magic Mind, and they're offering Horizon Music listeners a discount just to try it. Yay! Go to magicmind.com/horizon, that's H-E-R-I-Z-O-N, and then use the discount code HORIZON20, again, HERIZON20, to get 20% off your first time purchase, or get this, an amazing 56% off of your first subscription. Yeah, it does come in subscriptions. And obviously the 30 pack is the best value because, well, cheaper by the dozen, right? And don't worry, if you're already a subscriber, Magic Mind will honor the code for your next month's order. But to get the discount, you have to go to the right page, which is magicmind.com/horizon, and then remember to use the discount code HORIZON20 when checking out. Links are on the show notes page for this episode for your convenience, so you can give it a try. And if you do, and you like it, please let me know. I'd love to hear your story. Anyway, now let's get back to the chat.
And we're back. This is Thea Wood. I'm here with Satori Shakur in Detroit at Mary Grove College.
Mary Grove Theater.
Woohoo! And we're just going to jump right in by going back. Mm-hmm. I'd like to know a little bit about that little girl who first picked up a violin.
Well, it's third grade. Teacher says, who's right-handed? Of course, most of the class raised their right hand, including myself. And the teacher picked 5, and she said, which I was one of. And we go down the annex. I can still hear the lady's heels clicking on the floor. And she took us to a room. When she opened the door, there were violins, cellos, violas. And she said, pick out an instrument. And I picked out a violin. And that's how I got started. It never crossed my mind I could play the violin. It never entered my world, but she introduced me to the violin. And so we had to pay for the violins. And of course, my mother and my father, they couldn't afford to pay for a violin. So I made a little cardboard violin, put some thread on it, and walked around the house with a pencil. And then a couple months later, President Kennedy invested in education. And we could use the violins free. Mm-hmm. And I became passionately involved with the violin. By the time I was in 8th grade, my teacher said, well, she should have private violin lessons. So my mother bought me a violin for $50 and invested in some. Mr. Nelson would come every Saturday and give me violin lessons. And when I got to high school at Cass Tech, I entered the music program there. And we would play the background parts or the string parts on Motown records. We didn't even know who was singing, but when it came on the radio, it's like, we played that, you know. So I played violin all the way up until it was time to go to college. And then I majored in voice.
And then you majored in voice. Mm-hmm. Okay, so how did you end up in New York? Because was that your next step after college?
My next step after college, well, before, I wanted to be a star.
Of course.
Well, I wanted to be a star. That's what they said, what do you do? I want to be a star. But we were singing art songs and opera. And I made a tape. Tape, and I sent it. I made three copies, and I sent it to a friend of mine in New York, L.D. Lewis, and a couple more people. L.D. calls me and says, look, there's a guy in my building. He's a manager, and he really liked your tape. He wants to fly you out to meet you. So he flew me out to meet me. And then he flew me back because there was an investor to invest in an album project. So we went up to this penthouse, this big white grand piano, and he plays and I sing. And so Richard says, well, can she sing? The investor asked, could I sing? And he says, oh yeah, she can sing. So they invested money. We went to a recording studio, Luther Vandross, Irene Cara, Gordon Grovey, Gordy, and Diva Gray were background singers on my album because they were the top session singers in New York. I recorded half of the album. The producer ran off with the master tapes, never to be seen again. So I stay in New York because my dream was to be on Broadway. So I'm in New York on Broadway, and a friend of mine who lives there, Overton Lloyd, who did all the album covers for Parliament Funkadelic, says, ooh, they're having auditions for this new group called the Brides of Funkenstein. And so I borrowed money, came back to Detroit, auditioned. They had already hired somebody. So, well, I'm on my way back to New York. Dawn called me and she says, look, if the girl doesn't work out, we'll call you. Now I'm working at New York Discotheque. I'm a secretary for these rich millionaires. And I get the call. She says, can you come? And I said, yeah. So I walk into the office. I said, Maurice, I'm getting ready to go sing with the biggest black rock band in the world. And he says, oh, that's great. When are you leaving? I said, now. He said, you can't leave now. You're supposed to order that Rolls Royce for me. And I said, I'm leaving now. And I left and I came back to Detroit. And the aliens of P-Funk picked me up and took me straight to the rehearsal hall. And a week later, I was on stage in front of 10,000 people in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
And how did that feel?
I didn't know people could be that small in the way back there. But we went on to play 20,000, 80,000, the big funk concert. So if I'm not intimidated by any audience that's under 80,000 people, okay?
Incredible. Well, I think at that point I'd start feeling like the star. I mean,
we had top service. People with, I mean, it was just, we rode in limousines. You know, Kiss My Baby, stuff like that. You eat at McDonald's, yeah.
Okay. So you were with them for 10 years, is that right?
I was with them from 78. The one that started on the One Nation tour, and I. After that, I recorded with them all the way until 1985, and then I left Detroit and went to Hawaii to chill out.
Yeah. Well, okay. I would assume you'd have to chill out because that's quite an undertaking. And I'm curious, what would a day in the life with P-Funk look like for you? What would a typical day be like?
Road manager, get up. We get on the bus when we head to the gig. So we'd do the gig and get right back on the bus and do another gig. We'd sometimes do 10 one-nighters, and then maybe we'd be in a hotel. I'd collect hotel keys because at that time we had those little with the room number.
Plastic.
And they had the address on them, so at the end of the tour I would put them in the mailbox.
Do you still have them?
Oh, no, I put them in the mailbox.
Oh, you did? Oh, okay.
Because they had the address.
And then they would just send them back.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, it never even occurred to me to do that.
That's what it says. Put it in the mailbox.
So. And you're good to go. Oh, my gosh. Okay, so...
So it was crazy.
That is crazy.
It was a crazy, crazy thing.
Was there a favorite moment or concert or event that happened?
Paris. We're singing and the crowd is, you know, going with us and we couldn't speak French and I'm sure they could speak English, but it was like the music was the great equalizer. It didn't matter whether we understood the language, but it was just the vibe. So Paris, France was outstanding.
Was outstanding. And during this time, is that when you started writing?
I always wrote, you know, but I didn't think of myself as a writer because writing is like, to me, was breathing, you know. I remember writing a little poem and telling my sister on the bus home from high school, I told her, "You didn't write that." Yes, I did. Is it special? Why are you? I always wrote. And matter of fact, when I was 13, I asked my mother to get me a typewriter because I wanted to write children's books. So I have stacks and stacks of files of writing stories. And I wrote, I was a comedy writer for a sketch comedy show in Canada.
Okay. Now, was that before or after you became a mother?
After.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And you went to Hawaii after tour. And tell me about how motherhood changed your direction. Because I know so many women who say they left the music industry when they became mothers.
I was singing with P-Funk. I met my then husband, and he had a band, a reggae band and a rock band called Cherubin. And I was the lead singer for the band. So I sang up until 8 months pregnant. I remember saying, "Oh, I've got to sit down because the baby is tired." So I delivered the baby. Our band went to Japan. We played. We were there for 5 weeks in Japan, playing dance music. You know, they wanted to dance in Japan. So the baby, I suffered from postpartum depression. So it was a terrible time. And I left, and I went to Hawaii to sort of heal myself. So.
Okay.
Yeah,
being
pregnant was nothing because I was performing. The baby was inside. Outside, when I gave birth, I was still doing gigs, you know, but nothing like before.
And back then, people didn't talk about postpartum depression.
Didn't even know you had it.
No.
Didn't know what it was.
Mm-mm.
I just thought I was a monster.
Oh.
Why am I not bonding with my child?
Yes.
You know, something's wrong with me, and I couldn't tell anybody because all the rest of the mothers looked like they had it under control.
Well, and looked is the key word, because that's not necessarily true either.
I'm finding that out now.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So you, in 2012, mm-hmm. you started the, basically, your storytellers.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And what happened in life that moved your heart in that direction?
Wall Street crashed.
Mm-hmm.
If you listen to my story tonight, I'm going to be telling that story. Wall Street crashed. I was a working actress. By that time, I was a professional actress working in Toronto doing, and I come back to Detroit because my son was injured in a car accident and subsequently died.
I'm so sorry.
Thank you. And then Wall Street crashed, and I didn't know what I was going to do, and then I met the Moth, and I told a story. I won. The next thing I know, they're asking me to tell stories at the Fillmore Theater in front of almost 2,000 people, flying me around the country. I'm doing the Moth Ball with Adam Gopnik and Richard Price and Garrison Keillor, and NPR, and I felt like my story was healing me. So Detroit at that time was suffering from emergency management, water shut off, Flint water crisis, loss of democracy, foreclosures, you name it, it was suffering. And so I thought, well, if storytelling is healing me, I wonder what it can do for the city of Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
But I was living in a bedroom in my sister's house because I had to move out of my loft. And I didn't know how would I start such a thing, but the idea was delicious. So I rented a little loft space in downtown Detroit, sold tickets in advance, and we sold out, 45 seats. And we just kept expanding from that point on until we got invited to the Charles Wright. And this is our 10th year.
Amazing. And do you think that your musical experience was a major influence in that being a successful endeavor for you?
I think that being an artist automatically, if you're being an artist, is all automatically puts you in the category of an entrepreneur. You have to create your own opportunity, especially if you're African American. There's no doors going, hey, come on in here. So I had always created things. I founded a theater company in Toronto because I wanted to do a play, and all the theater companies were like, our mandate says this money, like actor, for the whole season. So we started Obsidian Theater Company. It's 22 years old. It changed the tapestry of theater in Toronto, and that leaked over into Stratford. I went to Stratford about a month ago. I mean, to see, she played Mom in Chicago, and it's so diverse. You know, LGBTQI, all color, you know, so it made a difference.
Makes a big difference. And you're heading back over there, aren't you?
I'm headed back to do. I go to Soul Pepper Theater to do the 20th anniversary of The Kink in My Hair, which was a hit.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad I caught you before you left.
Yes.
This is very exciting to be able to do this.
Yes.
I know that you meet a lot of storytellers because you host a lot of storytellers on your show.
I develop storytellers. Everybody has story, but very few people know how to tell their story. So to have a quality control, I work with every storyteller who walks on that stage to get their story in a space where they can deliver it effectively and to the audience. Because people don't know, what do I keep in? What do I take out? You know, well, I was born. No. And I teach storytelling. You know, I have clients, lawyers, performers. I taught at Duke University, Wayne State, you name it. And I have contracts with the state of Michigan to impact maternal mortality due to implicit bias. I'm working with men, groups, you know, the Zoological Society, Eleanor Ford House. So I'm there to do workshops, storytelling workshops.
And one of our values at Horizon Music Foundation, our nonprofit, is that stories incite change.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is a huge part of what your mission is, and your audiences are affected by these stories.
It connects people.
And so do you have a story, I guess I should say, to share about an unexpected story someone shared that the audience was just floored by?
Oh, so many stories. We had a story of a woman who murdered her boyfriend when he was abusive to her child, and she dumped this body with the help of a couple of friends in a junkyard and was going to get away with the murder, but she felt guilty, so she confessed, and when the judge told her, you're going away for 25 years, she's not going to be an old woman. But what she did in prison, the difference she made with the women. There was another young man who was accused of murder that he didn't commit. He spent 34 years in prison for a crime he didn't commit. He's going to be telling a story next month.
Mm.
There was a trans woman who told a story on our stage, and a number of black men called to say, I have never been that close to a trans person. I'm like, you just didn't know it. Come on. this is a world full of human beings, and some of them, you know. And so they said, I could connect, you know, especially when she started talking about how the police pulls her over all the time. So you don't know what somebody's going to take from your story, because it's a little work of art. It's a package of wisdom, you know. And so we're developing storytellers, and we're also developing listeners.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people's attention span is short, but with storytelling, people are willing to listen to you tell a 10-minute, 12-minute story.
Right, which is a lot longer than they're going to get on TikTok or Twitter or any of those.
Mm-hmm.
So songwriters are storytellers.
Mm-hmm.
And you having a musical background and a storytelling background, what advice would you give women who are songwriters or storytellers that are either going into the business or want to take it to the next level? What would be a word of wisdom that you could share with them?
If you love it, continue to do it, continue to develop, put yourself purposely in the way of those that are better. If you're a big fish in a little pond, leave the pond and find an ocean. Find your betters and sit under your betters. and go and see a lot of different things to inspire yourself, to get ideas. But you just have to stick with it. Now, there are going to be times when it looks like a dry desert, nothing. But you just keep doing what you do. If you love it, you'll keep doing it.
Absolutely. Now, I know that there are people who are going to want to reach out to you. How do people get in touch with you?
They can go to SatoriShakur.com.
Easy enough. And we'll, on the show notes, we'll make sure that we have links to your website and some of your work and some of your storytelling projects. And maybe we could find an old YouTube clip of some P-Funk shows.
If you go to my website, you'll find links to a lot of stuff. You can just Google P-Funk, Brides of Funkenstein.
And there you are. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh.
If you want to see a documentary, Tear the Roof Off is out there. I think it's on Hulu. Mike Judge, who did Beavis and Butthead, they did Tales from the Tour Bus. Mike Judge's Tales from the Tour Bus, so I'm an animated character telling my story of time with P-Funk along with George and some other people from P-Funk. All animated.
Well, there you go, everybody. Now you've got not only listening things to do, but also things to watch, movies to watch. Thank you so much, Satori, for being with us today. This was such an honor. And ladies and gentlemen, we love hearing stories like Satori's because they inspire us to be dreamers, rule breakers, and rock stars.
That's a wrap. If you like this episode and want to stay connected, please visit horizonmusic.com and subscribe to our newsletter for episode announcements, articles, live event updates, and more. Giving credit where credit is due, please visit the show notes for a list of people who made this production possible, plus links and videos that are relevant to our special guest. This podcast is the property of Thea Wood Productions, LLC, and is protected by copyright law. Use of this podcast is for personal and non-commercial purposes only. No other use of this production, including and without limitation, reproduction, retransmission, or editing, may occur without prior consent from Thea Wood Productions. Send all requests to thea@horizonmusic.org. Copyright 2024, all rights reserved.